Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Welcome to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Tacticam. Tacticam is by far the easiest way to begin filming your hunts. Whether it's a budget-friendly solo with a 4K 5.0, Tacticam has something for everyone. Check them out at tacticam.com. This year, we're also working with Spartan Forge. Spartan Forge is technology intersecting with the deer woods. It's a farmer's almanac on steroids. Basically, Spartan Forge is building a neural network to help think for you on where these deer are going to move. They use car deer studies, collar deer studies from Alabama to New York, all the way out west. They are compiling all these data points, plugging them into a supercomputer that's breaking down all of that information, and then they're tracking back fawn births to find peak ruts in each of these areas. They're looking at deer movement based on time of year, weather patterns, over 30 years of weather, and the price is incredible, but that price is going up. So the app is about to be released, and when it does, that price is going to go up. So get on there, start your 14-day free trial, go to spartanforge.ai, and when you do, you can use code BOWHUNTER, and that'll save you 25%. Spartan Forge, find, fix, finish. All right, so this week's episode, we're talking again with Greg Litzinger. I was having some conversations with some guys earlier about, everybody wants to know what's in your pack, things like that. So I thought I'd go over that with Greg. But I was also having conversations about hunting in the morning and becoming a better morning hunter. And that's just one of those things that, you know, comes with time. Some guys are afraid of the dark. Some people don't like going way in, navigation, afraid of getting lost. How early to go in. So we're going to cover all of that in this podcast, and always fun talking with Greg. But first, we got to give a shout out to our Patreons. Patreons allow this show to continue doing the things that we're doing. I'm recording on this podcast recorder, helped fund by the Patreon dollars. Basically, Patreon is a crowdfunding for creators, and it allows us to do tons and tons of things, whether it's hunt out of state, go to the ATA show, upgrade our equipment, make more videos. It allows us to keep doing what we're doing, and we can't thank those Patreons enough. In doing so, with our partners, we give back. So we try and give away as much stuff as we possibly can through our sponsors and then through that extra money. So this quarter, we do quarterly giveaways. We are giving away a complete saddle package. We're going to give away the Latitude Method 2, either the XL or the regular. Really awesome. I'm not a dual panel guy, but the magnets have got me almost convinced. Tethered gave us a set of Tethered 1 sticks to try out. From what I can tell, they're not available at all right now. So this might be one of your only chances to get a hold of those. Along with that, it looks like it's going to be the Trophy Line Mission Platform. The EDP. The Mission Platform is just a little bit big for me, but that's what people wanted. That's what Trophy Line made, but their EDP platform is a little bit more user-friendly. And then we'll have to get some ropes as well. So we're going to give those away all in one package. Basemap, we also work with Basemap. Basemap has some incredible things that are coming out. If you haven't checked out Basemap, certainly do so. The value is insane. Everything that you get with any other mapping app for $30 for the entire year, you can use code Chronicles. You'll save 20%. Got to go online to do that. That makes it $24 for the entire year, $2 a month for the entire country. I mean, I use this when I'm looking for where people live, when I'm, you know, when I'm traveling to see where things are, what's near me. I'm dropping pins when I see deer on the side of the road, looking for public nearby. All of these things. And if you had tried Basemap in the past and are, you know, thinking about going back to it, the interface is like completely changed. The high-res imagery is amazing. But definitely check them out. They give away one of their pro packs as well as some swag, hat and shirt and all that stuff. Spartan Forge offers a year subscription to one of our Patreons for that, as well as Zinger Fletchings. So Zinger Fletchings is some cool guys from Michigan. Met them at the Tether Teaching Train last year. Tried out some of their fletchings and you know, just been kind of talking back and forth with them ever since, and shot those fletchings at the Total Archery Challenge, you know, all the way out to 125 yards, and they performed incredibly, even had John a little bit more on board, as he's quite the purist, but, you know, that's all stuff that we give away to our Patreons, you know, four times a year. We're trying to give away more stuff, but it's just, you know, whatever comes down the pike, but I think that's a pretty good saddle package. I think someone's going to really be happy with that. So, but you can check that out at patreon.com/bowhunterchroniclespodcast. You can click the link in our Instagram. You can go on our webpage, bowhunterchronicles.com, click on the Patreon link. But, you know, we can't say enough to those guys. Talk to many of them daily, either on Instagram or a Marco Polo group that's really created a community. And it's, you know, almost like having a podcast group in your own right, to talk through ideas, gear, all that stuff, with people that are all on the same page. So, if you are a Patreon and you haven't checked that out, go to the Patreon messages and I've sent out links to that. So you can definitely check that out. But for those of you just listening, thank you so much for listening. Every month we get more and more listeners and, we can't thank you enough. If you like what we're doing, tell somebody, you know, leave us a review. That helps us as well. But, you know, just tell a friend and thank you as always for listening. All right, everybody, Adam back with another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast. John is in full blown summer duty. So he just bought a camper and his wife's like, hey, we're going here, we're going there, we're going here. I don't have a schedule, so we're just working around it at this point. So today we've got our friend Greg Litzinger, the bow hunting fiend. And we're going to talk a little bit about gear as far as like everybody loves and we've been talking about it like in our Patreon group about like pack dumps and what does everybody bring into the field. And so I wanted to talk to Greg a little bit about that. I feel like Greg is the most like relatable hunter to most of us because he shares his failures as much as his successes. He works a ridiculous schedule and like spends all of his time that I can tell either with his family or scouting. And I think that resonates with a lot of guys as it does with me. So, how are you doing tonight, Greg?
Good. You know, just like everybody else, got a million things to do and not enough time to do it.
So how's your season going to be shaping out this year? I know you hunt a couple different states and a couple different, you know, times a year. You got some longer seasons, short seasons. So what do you got coming up this year for hunts and where are you focusing your time?
I got trying to hit the early season in Delaware this year. There's a couple spot by my job. I was poking around today. You know, it's a little bit of hike from my house, but this season opens September 1st. So they're in full velvet, you know. I can hunt the first 3 days. So I'm going to try and hunt the first 3 days. And seen a decent buck this morning. Two decent ones. Put out a couple cameras. And I'll go back in about a month, you know, 2 weeks for the season, check the cameras, pull them so they don't get stolen. They're low-hanging fruit. But I don't think too many people are out scouting that area right now because the bugs, the flies are so bad. They're just awful. Then got PA, two trips to PA, doing a hunt for myself and then going out for the Wounded Warrior Spartan Forge thing. And then try and fill in the rest of the time here in Jersey. You know, nothing too crazy.
Okay. Now, you just mentioned that you and I were talking a little bit before we started recording here, and I was telling you about a spot that I hunt, but this question I think resonates with a lot of guys is like for that early season, for that, you know, you just talked about that you're seeing these bucks in Delaware. So you're out there, you drop some cameras, you just verified that these deer are in the area. One, what's the pressure like there? And then two, how are you using that information? So you saw those bucks in a field.
You dropped some cameras. They were like an overgrown. I was actually just walking the edges of some fields, just trying to cut tracks. Basically, I had a few cameras in my bag, just trying to find something. I hunted there years ago, when I was killing a lot more bigger deer on a regular basis. I'd be tagged out come, you know, middle of October. So I was like, I want to hunt. So I'd go to Delaware and hunt, and really haven't been back since. I hunted there for a couple of years. So I was just, you know, in early seasons new to me. Like this is all new because, you know, there's some overgrown fields. There's really not much food. There's browse. There's some, you know, most of the ag is on private, you know, so it's new to me, I guess, you know, so I'm just like average person, really just trying to walk field. I just cut a big track, you know, and I cut a big track and just mess around with the trail camera. I look up and there's a couple bucks in this overgrown field, just feed milling around. I guess there's some clover and whatnot, like coming up through this. It's not CRP. It's just, I call it ragweed. I don't know what the actual stuff's called, but they were in there just browsing away, like, a, you know, 150 yards away. So I threw a camera up and went up a little bit further, threw a camera, and just got to let it soak for a month and see what happens. You know, if the cameras don't show anything, I'm not going to be too discouraged because, like I said, a September 1st opening day, the bucks are still a summertime pattern, you know. Oaks, for the most part, really aren't dropping heavily. There might be a few, so I'm just going to just cruise around and do a lot of glassing. You know, I might glass for 3 days and not find anything worth hunting. But the place is by my job, so I could sneak out, on Fridays and hunt, the first, month of the season or whatever, after the first couple of days.
So in that situation, because the place where I was hunting, I'd scouted the area like quite a bit, and I knew of an area where some of the bigger bucks bedded there. Mm-hmm. And it was only from the sign, like this really like nasty spot where people wouldn't go. And in there was just some huge rubs and some beds like on the top of these like little tiny bit of topography. And it's a bulletproof spot for these deer. I mean, they can see anybody coming. The wind is going to give anything away. And it's one of these things where I'm like racking my brain. Because this year driving around out, like I said, I saw two bucks coming out of there that were, 120s probably, maybe mm-hmm. the ones maybe bigger than that. And so it's like, okay, but I'm going to see those bucks just like everybody else that drives around there, super mm-hmm. pressured, and it's a super bulletproof like spot for the deer. So is that one of the spots where you would want to hunt? Like you would want to, I guess, stick to what you know and go in there like super early in the morning and wait for them to be coming back to that bed?
That's, in theory, yeah. And I think in early season, I don't know what time does that area open?
October 1st.
Yeah. So, I'd give it a whirl. I'm super aggressive. Like I would do it. I would try and find out where the best possible ways, because in the morning time, a lot of people don't hunt mornings, in the early season. I know quite a few people that they either don't know how, they're afraid to bump the deer out. But if you're pretty calculated with your entry and exit, you can get, away with a lot of stuff in the early season. Even if you do bump them out, might not scare them the next county. You might get another crack at them. But I do, I do love the morning. So I would sit it personally.
Yeah. So in those deer that you saw out there, are you trying to look at their, obviously I'm guessing you saw them feeding. Are you looking then to say, okay, where are they going to be bedded? Or?
Yeah. Like I said, I think those deer that I was seeing were, bedding relatively close by, because it's midday and they're out like kind of on their feet browsing. It was like 11 o'clock. So I don't think they're far from, where they would be bedding. 11 o'clock in the morning, a couple 100 yards max, maybe. So I have from the topography, you look at, where things would be. And just from walking that piece of woods years ago, I got an idea where a buck would bed, especially like a group of bucks, And I think early season for me, that early, there might not be bedding in the most strategic location. They're going to kind of bed a little lazy, I guess, because there's nobody to bother them all summer. The guard's kind of down. Mm-hmm. So I think I can get away with, going all in, on opening morning or a day after, but the wind is right.
Okay. Yeah. And that's just one thing. Like, I guess I've always just written off the, cause I guess I'm never 100%. Like I can look at something and say, that's a buck bed, but it's totally different when, I said that I have them marked on the map and then watch them come out of there in the evening, like right when they're supposed to. Now that kind of gets me a little bit more fired up. Like, okay, that is, and then you think, okay, well, I need to be there, within 100 yards of where you can shoot them and all that for evening. Like I think everybody just writes off the morning, like, cause that, it doesn't get much more aggressive,
Yeah, exactly. And people, it's not aggressive, it's aggressive, but if you're very careful how you go in and out. Like, it's not really aggressive. It's, you'd be very efficient with your hunts because, you know, we're all busy guys. You know, if you can tag out and open a day, why not tag out and open a day? Like, why drag it out for 3 months? Because if I, you know, it's like, I'd tag out and open a day every year. You know, I'd have no problem with that. But a lot of guys, I think, are afraid to get aggressive because they don't want to bump the deer out, or on TV, or they read an article, you know, years ago said, you know, it's hard to hunt bucks in the morning. In certain places, yeah, you know, if you're hunting, if your only access is to a bean field, the deer in the bean field, yeah, you can't hunt that in the morning, you know. But if you have a backdoor entrance, you know, some way to access that without blowing them out, then it's not being aggressive, it's being smart. And I think a lot of people don't know how to, I won't say a lot of people, you know, some people are afraid to take that chance, maybe. And because I got friends that will not get aggressive in the morning because they think they're going to do everything wrong. Maybe they're afraid of the dark, that they're loud, setting their stand up. Like, I don't know. But like, hunting in the morning over beds, like, you got to be very efficient in how you get into the woods and how quiet you set your stand up. And you can, I mean, we've all heard guys using climbers in the morning, and it sounds, you know, like, you know, two grizzly bears fighting, you know, and it's like, what are you climbing with? Like, what is that sound? You know, but they're just not very quiet. So maybe those guys don't like hunting mornings because it's hard for them to be quiet. I don't know. That's what I tell myself anyway.
Yeah, I think the thought for me, like, now I'm like in real time processing this, and I'm thinking like, well, that area is like super, super, super pressured. So I guess it's like, why not me bump them rather than somebody else? You know what, yeah, I mean? Exactly. Somebody's going to blow them out. And then even if I get busted or something, then I'm learning. Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
And I think a lot of people have a hard time with that. It is, it's very hard for some people to say, all right, I'm going to, you know, learn from this mistake, because, you know, it's very hard to admit when you're wrong. You know, I don't like to admit when I'm wrong. A lot of people don't. And some people just struggle with that. You know, that I'll bump a deer out, and their season never get so frustrated and angry. Like, listen, you bump a deer out, that deer's not fuming, punching the walls, or screaming, yelling in the woods. Like, he just gets down his merry way and moves on. You know, like,
yeah, it's just like, we always see things as like a worst case scenario, you know? Yeah. And so, like, people have probably heard on the podcast, like, the property that I have in the UP is just over into the central time zone. So naturally we are in like a time space continuum, like warp thing. So all the clocks say this time, your phone switches back and forth on what time it is. And then, like, the last time that I hunted up there was over daylight savings time. So now, like, all the chips were stacked against us. And, you know, inevitably there's that morning where you wake up an hour late because, you know, whatever, I bumped a deer out on my way in, a buck. And I was like, oh, well, that was my deer for the day, you know?
Yeah.
And then I ended up missing a even nicer 8-point, you know, 2 hours later, because it was just that time of the year and it's just, you know, cruising. So it's like you said, it's like, what, that deer was not like, oh, hey, everybody, he's over there. I mean, it's kind of like that Jurassic Park meme. It's like, see, nobody cares. You bumped a deer.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
right?
Yeah. I know, because I struggled with it for a long time. And you, for me, like, I reached a point of like, I needed to make a change because what I was doing wasn't getting me the results. So there was a period where I was so aggressive, I was reckless. But that's how I learned not to be, you know, reckless, was by being reckless. Because it's like, wait, I'm getting the same results. I was like, I need to be this aggressive, but bring it back in, like reel it back in and be a little more, you know, stealthy, you know, be a little more efficient with my time and whatnot. Then it's like, okay, so that didn't work. But what I took away from that is like, all right, I can make this work for me, you know. And everybody has, they operate, they're wired differently. So you need to find a system that works for you.
So in that like system that works for you. And like I said, I want to get to like your gear and like your, like what you bring and that kind of breakdown. But it's funny cause I was just having a conversation like about being a better morning hunter, with, Alex over at Latitude. And he's like, you know, he's thinking about all the deer that he's killed and they've, most of them have been like in the evening or whatever. And he's like, I need to become a better morning hunter. But it's like, you know, people don't like to get up. People don't. So what do you say that the keys are for like hunting in the morning, or what do you think are people, are things that hold people back that they can overcome?
Their entry and exit, to be I call it an effective / efficient morning guy. Like, you have to be dialed in because you have to get used to, you know, getting there super early and taking your time getting, like when I hunt in the mornings, like I don't go just like bumbling through the woods. I get my stand like super fast. Like, I leave myself plenty enough time. So if I do bump a deer out, I can sit back for 5 minutes, you know, let the woods kind of calm down and then head about my merry way. You know, like I want to be well set up, you know, well before gray light, you know, like an hour quiet. So if I do make any noises or ting something, you know, if I mess up, it's not going to mess the hunt up, you know, because I'm way in there before the deer I'm targeting is going to be working through that general area. And that was very hard to find that timeline because, you know, I did the whole John Eberhardt, like 3 hours before light. Well, I'm running on 2-3 hours sleep. I can only do that like three times in a row and I'm dead. So like, well, that doesn't work for me. So from like 3 down to 2 and I'm like hour and a half is kind of, you know, if I were to actually think about it, go back and probably like an hour and a half quiet. And by quiet, I mean like I'm set up. I'm not getting to the tree an hour and a half. Like I'm up the tree and I'm just relaxed, you know, getting changed and cooling down, doing a lot of stuff like an hour and a half before gray light, not sunrise, like gray light, shooting light.
And so how do you, I guess one of the things that goes back to gear is everybody seems to be wanting the most mobile, the lightest, the coolest, the, you know, the most shiny thing, you know, so for most guys, I would say are constantly switching up the things that they're bringing into the woods with them. And they are, you know, it may be just completely new to them anyways. And then to try to do that in the morning, an hour or an hour and a half before it gets light out. So how do you practice that, you know, that getting ready in the dark? And are you going up and down the tree with the light on also?
Yeah, I have a real dim light, a real dim green light I'll use to climb a tree. But you have to practice it. Be it at night, go out and get and set up in the dark and take down in the dark, like well before the season. Like, it's easy to set up midday and practice in the backyard, like, do, 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 do. This is great. I love it. No, like, set up in the morning, like, for me, shooting in that early morning, like, I've literally set everything up in my yard, you know, 30 minutes before shooting light, but taking my time, setting the sticks up, setting, you know, when I was working on my methods, like, you know, streamlining myself, you know, 15 years ago, I started that process. I would set up in my yard. And I'll set up, you know, on Saturday mornings, wake up and like I was actually going on a hunt in August and get set up and sit in the dark, get used to it. And it's like, okay, this isn't too bad. And then as soon as gray light comes, you know, have my 3D target, take one shot and then climb down, do all that for one shot because I'm programming myself to, all right, this is what's going to happen. So mentally, you know, and physically, I go through the motions and it's like, okay, it's, I can do this, you know? And as I've, you know, progressed, and for me, I don't bounce around a lot with equipment. Like, for years I used a Lone Wolf climber. That's all I used. And then I went to the hang on. That's all I used. Like now, when I first got in saddle hunting, I was like saddle, hang on climber, and it kind of, now it's just all saddle. And I try and keep things the same for a good stretch of time. Like, I'm not worried about the latest and greatest. I'm worried about what I can set up comfortably, what I'm comfortable setting up. You know, like this year, I'm making a change. I'm using, going back to sticks, the Timber Ninja sticks. So I was using Vault Edge steps for the last couple of years. So now going back to the sticks, like, oh, I have to change. I can't bring the platform up with me on the back of the saddle because I got sticks hanging there now. So I was like, all right, well, that's something I need to work on. So I was practicing that in the yard. So I jacked up my ankle, and it's totally different using sticks versus the Wild Edge steps. So it's like something I like relearn how to use sticks for the saddle, because ever since I've been saddle hunting, I've been using, you know, Wild Edge steps. So I'm trying to just get all that dialed in here. So it's like not opening morning, I'm dropping a stick or doing something, you know, stupid, you know, calls me a deer.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. You know, when you're like the scenario that we just outlined. So look, I know where these bucks are bedded. My best chance may be, you know, opening morning. I can't be up there like clanging my platform on my sticks in your scenario, because I didn't think about that until I got out there. And then, you know, now it's just,
all like for said, what? And it's like, even because I can do the sticks in daylight, like I get up, it's like, oh, I'm a big, but in the dark, you're hanging on this, you got the little loops, the little gear loops on each side. Well, in the dark, you got to lean back and you get, all right, so now I got to take my both hands off the tree because I can't really see, because the light, you can't really get the light where it needs to be. So it's like, I'm still fine tuning how to get them out, you know, quietly without, you know, getting too much motion, because there was a few times like I rock and the sticks would hit together. So I'm like, oh, so for me, like I got one loop longer than the other. So, you know, the odds of them, you know, clinging together, you know, the metal standoffs, slim to none, because one's longer than the other, you know? So it's like, all right, that's something I learned by just doing it wrong a half dozen times.
And like, so to that point, like, what goes into, so 15 years of like dialing your system in for, you know, being this mobile hunter, what do you bring out with you? And we'll go through like the iterations, like throughout the year, but like, what are the staples that are in your pack that, you know, no matter what time of year or whatever, like, what do you bring with you?
So, like, in my pack, I run a, you know, Badlands Super Day, and I've tried other packs. I just keep coming back to this pack because it's got pockets, and I've used the pack for hiking, and I keep everything, all my gear, in the same pouches, same thing. So, let's say I drop my light. I still know where everything is in my pack. I don't need my light to, you know, go in there like, all right, you know, my pull-up cord's here, this is here. So, there you go, like being consistent with what I have. Like, I keep going back to the Super Day pack because I've used it for so long, you know, and I just know where everything is. So in the dark, it's like, all right, you know, my pull-up pouch, my pull-up rope is on the right, you know, my bow hanger, little hero clip or whatever I'm using it this year will be in the left. You know, I have the strap that holds the knee cushion, seat cushion from the knees. That's in the same pouch. So I set these things up, and I set them up the same way every time I get to the tree, you know, and I know where everything is. So it's like, all right, my pack, I got pull up rope, food, water, all that stuff stays in the same pouch. Be it early season into winter bow, nothing leaves those pouches. And I think that's super important. Like, if you're changing your packs, move away through the season or changing, I don't really put anything in my pants because I wear bibs or I wear, you know, pants. So all my gear is literally just in my bag. So if I do change my pants or jacket, it doesn't really affect how I climb up the tree or get ready. Answer the question, or you want me to be a little more detailed of what actually the actual gear items?
I guess I'm just interested in, like, so there's guys like myself that I, you know, we're doing filming, so I've got my camera arm and I've got all my other stuff. And then I'm like, I think from my time like in the Marines where it was like, you know, everything was a redundancy because if you lost it, then you were fucked, you know? So
yeah,
it's like, so I have an extra flashlight, you know, I have an extra release. I have, but then you've got like guys that are like Dan Infall and they're like, well, I have a compass and like, that's about it.
Yeah.
So like,
yeah, I keep a compass, you know, flashlight. I have a tracking light that stays in my bag. I have an extra set of batteries for my headlamp and my things in a waterproof baggie. And that stays like in the water pouch. I don't really use it that often. My knife, I got like a little kill kit, knife, you know, headache, Tylenol, Pepto-Bismol, you know, rubber gloves, etc. That all stays in the pouch. And as I've gotten older, I've streamlined it by like taking less and less because, you know, 20 years ago, I took everything in the kitchen sink. Like I'm already got 40 pounds on camera on gear. What's another 10 pounds? Bring me a gallon of water. Like I'll have a party up in the tree. Now if I go, it's like, well, it's a half day set. I don't need a full Nalgene water bottle. I'll just bring a half. And I'll have water to truck, you know, but like come the rut, I'll bring two water bottles, you know, and have my little snack bag. I use like little, gear bags, you know, it's just one's kill kit, one's food, one's got some camera stuff in it and one's got the, you know, so I have them in the bag and they're all color coded. So it's like, I look down like, all right, you know, I know which one, what I'm looking for, I pull them out, put it aside, get what I want. Very, you know, I think I transitioned like going out west very easily because from hiking and hunting this way, like you get kind of organized, you know, in the pack, everything just boom, 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 boom. So there's no hiccups early in the morning. And there's guys out there that still bring a lot of gear. Like I bring a lot of gear because if I want to sit all day, like I have food, water, usually, you know, if I go out in the morning, I'll bring a full water bottle because if the action's good, I'm not coming out of the woods. You know, so I'll have enough gear to get me through a day. It might suck, but I can make it work.
Yeah, it's funny. Like when we used to run the real big climbers, like we tried to carry less stuff, I feel like. And I had, we had like Cabela's made these waterproof, like really nice big fanny packs.
Yeah.
And so you could carry all of your stuff and then you could strap your, you know, your outer layers to the outside of it. It had straps on it. And we would use those. And then like, as we, like, it was like, oh, well, now we're going to add this. Now we're going to add this. Oh, now we're just going to carry a backpack with that. And then everything just is like ebbed and flowed. It's like, well, now I don't have to carry that big stand. So I'm going to carry this backpack full of all this shit. Like, and then again, I've said it before, you know, like I'm not like a, Taylor Chamberlain, where everything is in its place, and even at the end of the hunt. So it might start that way at the beginning of the day, like the night before when I'm getting everything ready for my, you know, my hunt in the morning. But like after that all day sit and that walk back in the rain or the snow or whatever, and you're just like, you know, I'm pouring my boots out of water. Like I just throw the shit in the truck and then I organize it again later. So I don't necessarily remove any of the other stuff that I had. I just add more things. So it's like, oh, there's that and that. But I do like the organization stuff because I've got all those pouches and stuff exactly like what you said for going out west. And, you know, that would seem like a great way to, you know, just minimalize some of that stuff. So if it's in one of those pouches, aside from say the food one, then it just stays in there and it's in there and it just doesn't come out, you know?
And I think, you know, as I've gotten older too, I during hunting season, I have a sleds and that stays in the back of my truck and that'll stay in there with like a, you know, water bottles, towels, you know, and stuff like that, all ready to go. So I have that in my truck all hunting season, you know. Anytime it really comes out, you know, so if I'm going to work, I'll take it out. But like if I'm hunting, that just stays in it, you know, the cap locks up so I don't worry about it, you know, getting legs and walking. But and I have a little more stuff at the truck. I try and keep my truck somewhat organized, because if I ever do forget something or lose something, you know, like a light or a haul line, like I have a spare in the truck. You know, like the releases, I bring a spare release, I keep it in the bag. But I do practice with it. You know, it's the same design. It's not on a strap. So I do make sure you practice with a spare release, you know, and just little things like that. Cause I mean, I've dropped my release or lost my release. It's like, I got a spare, you know? So little things like that, I think goes a long way, you know, keeping somewhat, you don't have to be super organized, you know, but I think the more organized you are, the more streamlined you are, the more effective you can be in a crunch situation, you know, because you know you got enough gear to get the job done.
So do you have something like some sort of like sage worldly advice or whatever, as far as maybe like a creature comfort thing, or maybe something that, you know, that maybe you bring with you that other guys don't, you know, from all of your time, you know, being mobile and hunting that way?
No, you know, like I say, cause I've evolved and changed, you know, as I've gone through this, like now with the saddle, I feel like I've streamlined even more, cause now, you know, it's like, using a climber, the haul line, you know, I would have two haul lines, you know, one for the bag, one for my bow. You know, now I got just one haul line for my bow. You know, so as I've progressed through this, I've dumped a lot of stuff that were, you know, I'd always bring. You know, like I said, I'd always bring two water bottles. Now I just bring one Nalgene bottle. So I guess I don't really have anything that's like, that would, I think a lot of people relate to, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. I think generally speaking, like that's one of the things I've come across with like the older saddle hunters is like, I feel like they've already had their learning curve long ago. So they're like, oh, this is how I do this, or this is how I do that. Mm-hmm. And I think there's so many people because of the saddle, that are moving into a more mobile, type setup. And I think the hard part when I transitioned even just to the stand and sticks is like we talked about, like getting that stuff set up in the dark and like, you know, so for me, like you're saying, the loops on your saddle and all that stuff is, you know, those little like cheat codes or whatever.
Yeah.
I know, like, to get that done.
Like when it comes to, with the saddle, one thing I struggle with was using, because I got into using the bino harness when I was using the stand, like the hang on, even the climber, because I had all my stuff in the chest pouch, snacks, everything was like right there. Well, now that my bino pouch gets in the way of the bridge and the saddle. So it's like, well, all right, well, this, so used to have my binos there, try and put them on a tray and range find all that stuff. That's one thing I'm still trying to figure out, how to have it where it's seamless for me. And I still haven't figured out anything. You know, I still hang the binoculars on a strap on the tree and the rangefinder. I just feel I need something better. I've tried different harnesses. You know, I even used a Rick Young harness. Like I like that, but I can't really put my rangefinder on there because, you know, I'll get a ting every now and again, you know, if I move a little bit or anything. So it's like, ugh. So I'm still struggling with where to put my rangefinder. You know,
I feel the same way, especially in it. It's not as much in my bridge, cause I can kind of, I feel like I can work around that for me. And it's usually like in the late season, like when I have heavier clothes on. Mm-hmm. But like climbing up the tree, like when I'm setting my sticks or when I'm, you know, like, I guess there's always like, I find like I, at some point or another, I always feel like that scene from Christmas Vacation where Clark Griswold's just hanging there, and he's moving his hand up and down and up and down, like, I don't know where to put my hand. Like, yeah. Where I'm just, like, hanging there, like, all right. And so, like, at that moment, every single time, my bino harness is, like, scrunched up against the tree, and I can't reach to where I want to. And it's always climbing up the tree for whatever reason. Yeah. And I'm like, that's when I'm ready to ditch the bino harness. And but you're right, the convenience of it for, you know, just about every other situation.
Yeah, because I even like use it for shooting 3D. Like I started using it for everything. Once I went my like I got it a year from my 2016. I started practicing with it for elk hunting, and I'm like, man, this thing's cat's ass. And I was like, I bought like a smaller one. I was like, I want a bigger one. I bought more stuff. So I bought even a bigger one. I had more on my chest. That's fine for a 3D range because I ain't got to carry, you know, my pants ain't falling down or whatever. Like everything's just on my chest. Like, this is great. But for hunting, I'm like, all right, it just gets in the way. You know, and the stand's not too bad, but the saddle, like the big one was, I can't do it how I have the bridge. And even like my small compact one, I feel like if I'm turning, it'll brush against the bridge or the bridge will crush it. You know, if I'm leaning to the right, I can't get the binos out without, for me, it's deer probably can't hear it from 30 yards away, but I can hear it. And I'm like, nope. Because if I can hear it, I look at the deer's definitely hearing it. They could probably don't even know what's happening, but I'm like, it's so noisy, I can't do it. I can't do it, you know? So the Rick Young works a little bit better. I keep it like super tight, but then it's like almost like too tight where I can't get it up. It's like, I'm trying to like glass, like at a distance, it's like, pulling me down, and I'm like, I'm just trying to like lean back in the saddle. I'm like, this is not even really that comfortable, you know? So that's one thing I'm, you know, let's be what my fourth full season. And I still have figured out the bino harness thing. And I see guys that have them, they use them, and I'm like, cause where I have the bridge for my comfort thing, it just doesn't allow it, you know? It's like, yeah. So, and I try to shorten it up so it's like all up in my neck, you know, that's like super high, and it's like then it gets in the way of my bowstring or whatever. I'm like, eh. So that's I try to clip on a retractable clip, like old school back in the day.
Yep.
You know, on the thing. I'm like, all right, and I'll like let it go, and like it'll hit something. I'm like, well, that's because vinyl harness says let it go, it just falls right there, you know. But I'm so used to just kind of like dropping and shooting, and I'm like, well, that don't work. Muscle memory. So I'm like, oh, maybe I just need to practice more. You know, I should be practicing with that this summer, and I don't. So I'm like, oh, I'll swing it. And I still haven't figured it out. That's probably why I haven't figured it out.
Well, we talked about it a little bit on our last podcast, but sorry, do you wear your saddle in?
It depends on the walk and the type of vegetation I'm going through. Like if I'm going through like brush busting, then no, I'll stuff it in my bag. That's one reason I like the Super Day. It's big enough. I can throw my saddle in there with my pouches. You know, and plus for me, like longer walks, I don't have, you know, an ass or hips to hold up my pants sometimes. So I got like a belt super tight. And then with the saddle being super tight, I get hip pinched or, you know, it's uncomfortable. But this year I'm using those, from practicing with that BK outdoor suspenders, and I can keep the saddle super loose. That's kind of nice. So maybe I'll wear the saddle in more for longer hikes. Just take the pouch off. That way, I went through two tethered pouches. It's a fine light material. Mm-hmm. Well, sticker bushes are like, don't mind if I do. And they just grab it, you know, and then you get stuck on it, you know, and you're like fighting a sticker bush. So I started just putting my pouches in my bag and I would just walk in with the saddle. But long walks, I usually take – I'll put the saddle on when I get to the tree. And like I said, I'm never in a hurry, you know, for the most part. So taking the 2 minutes to put a saddle on isn't going to kill me by any means. But like walking out in the dark, I usually wear the saddle, you know.
And that's what I mean. I've always worn the saddle in. But I understand now talking with, you know, hearing it out, like, it's like, yeah, you don't need to do that. But it's the same thing as like on the way out. It's like, I just want to be done. So I'm like, we're out of here.
So yeah.
I'm not going to take it off and pack it all nicely away. It's like, we'll figure that out later.
It was, you know, it's one of those things, like it depends on the situation. You know, like in the mountains, because especially when I'm doing like the overnights, like the 2 or 3 day camping trips, I just keep the saddle in my backpack. I feel, because I'm usually, you know, going uphill and climbing over some rocks and whatnot, I just feel more comfortable with everything in my backpack, you know, my elk hunting backpack. Everything's super tight and I got nothing, you know, that's going to fall or whatever, because that's one place I feel like I'm always in a rush is the mountains. You're like, yeah, because you got a 2 mile hike going, a little bit of vert. You're like, I'm good. Or you're halfway through up there, you're tired, or, you know, you get a little winded and you're like, I just can't. And then last thing I need to do is worry about a saddle slipping down or getting loose, you know, or catching anything. But yeah, like, it depends on the situation. Like, I would say I'm wearing a saddle in, wearing a saddle out, maybe 50-50.
Okay. And you mentioned the, like the mountains and the overnight hunts. And that was something that I wanted to ask you about, like, as far as your gear goes, like when you go in, cause you'll go in a canoe or a boat and, you know, you've got to deal with the tides and all sorts of other stuff. But you're also hunting in the mountains and other things. So does the gear that you bring with you change for either one of those scenarios?
Say it again. Sorry.
So, you know, traditionally, I guess I would break my hunts up into, okay, early season, you know, rut, all day sits, late season. But I'm not going in anywhere by canoe, or I'm not going into the mountains. So is there things that you bring to the mountains that are different than like a quick after work hunt, or, you know, when you're going in and, you know, I mean, we've talked about this before. One of the things in your pack when you go get ready for your canoeing hunt should be a canoe paddle.
Yeah.
So
that is facts.
For those of you just tuning in, Greg has done some Instagramming from the boat launch without a canoe paddle.
Yeah. Wake up super early, catch that 2:30 or 3 o'clock. 3 a.m. tide, and it's like, wait, I need a paddle for this. Great.
But does that, like, so do you, are you bringing in anything, like, whether it's, like, safety devices or, you know, are you, like, if you're hunting 2 miles into the mountains for a couple days, like, do you have, like, an in-reach or a spot or something? Same thing with the tides or?
No, I should have one, but I don't. I talk about, I'm going to get one, and then I look at the price, I'm like, oh, wait, even though they're not that much money, I just, I don't know. Now I'm a father. I probably should have one of them. You know, all you listeners out there, if you're a father and you do stupid stuff, you should probably have one of them. You know, don't be like me. But now, like in the mountains, it's because there's bears up there. So water is critical. So use that, carry more water. And then you've got the water filter pouches and whatnot. But I mean, the temperature change in the mountains pretty good. So it's like, I bring an extra, you know, I bought a merino wool, like a 300 gram, like pullover. I bring, that now, my mountain hunts. If I get cold, usually I can get me through a hunt. If I'm a little chilly, cause it's kind of heavy. My legs, I bring over booties, like those little booties for over my boots. I wear like, the hike it so far, I wear just uninsulated boots. But then once you stop, you know, you get cold. So over booties and like said, water and snacks. I try to, in the mountains, you know, I consume a lot of food because I'm pretty much hiking, you know, 2 to 3 miles a day, some vert or some brush. So I eat a lot of food. So in the mountains, just a lot more food, pretty much like out, you know, pretty much what I take elk hunting, I take mountain hunting here in Jersey. You know, like the overnight trips, I keep it very consistent. It's the same, you know? Yeah, you know, and the same thing, one flashlight, headlamp, okay, nothing too crazy. I just bring a little extra clothing and food and water.
And what are you doing for, navigation. I mean, we're all using our phones, right? Yeah. Somehow. But what else?
I have two Garmin GPSs. I have an old school eTrex, and I have one of them. I think it's a 670 or something or whatever. But I bought that one for Montana, and it was just eating batteries up. I don't know if I got a defective model. I called Garmin. They told me to watch stuff, and it just burns through AA batteries. So I find myself just using my eTrex, my old, green screen, pointy arrow eTrex, and mixed with my phone on airplane mode, to save batteries. I'll bring a battery charger. Even when I whitetail hunt, I bring an external battery pack. That way, especially in the cold, for some reason my phone just eats juice if it gets cold. I think a lot of people's battery, So I just bring an extra charging battery pack.
Okay. And do you not bring a compass at all then?
Oh yeah, I have a compass that stays in my, another thing. It stays in my right front pocket. My compass is always in my right front pocket. That's pretty much everything that's in my pocket. My phone goes in my back pocket, or when I'm walking in, it'll be on my, right hip, and I'll have, my compass in my right front pocket and my phone in the cargo, whatever pocket dealy that's on the pants I have. And that's pretty much everything I have in my, in my pockets. My wallet stays in my pack, waterproof thing, and the keys to my truck, all that stuff is in a waterproof pack tied to my inside of my backpack. So, if I fall, dump out and then something happens, that stuff can't fall out of my pack, It's attached to it permanently.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's a lot of good, like that little tip right there, having the stuff split up into, those pouches like you do Western hunting, but then having that specifically, this is where it is, this is where this is, this is where it's tied in. Cause even for myself, I don't think the one day I came out of the woods with, one of those clip on hat lights, in my mouth because I couldn't find my headlamp, which I knew that I had, and I was crossing waist deep water, and I had my phone in my one hand and my bow in the other hand and all my shit on my back, trying to navigate with a clip-on light in my teeth.
Yeah. That's another thing with the gear when it comes to my flashlights, because pull out a flashlight out of your pack, turn on and batteries are dead. When I'm not using my flashlights, I take the batteries out and flip them around, flip one battery around. So if the button does get hit on the headlamp or on my tracking light, it doesn't turn on and kill the battery inside the pack. That's one thing I started doing 2 years ago. Because the headlamp, they're, there's never a lock switch on the light. You turn it off and it locks or something. It seems like it's a push button. So you put it, you stuff it in the little side pouch. Well, if you hit it, by accident, it turns on. I don't know if it's on during the day. You got to grab it and it's like, man, this light sucks. And you're like, oh, you got no batteries. So I take that when I get to the tree in the morning, I get set up, and I'll open the battery things up and I'll swap them out, swap one of the batteries out backwards and then shut it. That way I'm not, turning the light on by accident.
Okay. Yeah. I run a Phoenix, headlamp, and that one is real funny. I got it for Christmas years ago and I got it, put a battery in it, and I'm a guy, so I didn't read the directions. It's just a headlamp, right? And I was like, I pushed the button 100 times and it's like, oh, nope, it doesn't work. So I sent it back, got another one. Same story, doesn't work. And my daughter was maybe maybe a year old at the time, and she was playing with it, and then all of a sudden it just comes on. Well, you got to hold the button down for like 5 seconds for it to come on, so it doesn't just go on in your pack. So that's good, but it took me two different headlights to figure that out. Outsmarted by a one-year-old.
Yeah. It's like, Daddy, this is how you do it. Damn you. You know, because I've been trying to toy with the idea of the rechargeable ones. Because I know, like, a lot of sheep hunters, they use rechargeable ones. But it's like, all right, you know, you're usually getting back to camp, you know, unless you kill something, you know, right at dark, right after dark, maybe, I don't know. But a lot of these guys, they have rechargeable headlamps. And I've seen the rechargeable headlamps in the store, maybe because I haven't used them in the dark, but I'm like, man, that just light just looks not bright enough for me. I'm not afraid of dark by any means, but like, I'm going to be able to see it or be able to have like another, you know, because mine, I go green, I walk through the woods, and if I need to, I hit the other button, it's a nice bright white light. So it's like green when I walk through, it's like, oh, what's that over there? You know, or white light, you see a hunter or a deer or something. So I think a rechargeable one from like a space and efficiency with batteries would be ideal, but I don't know if I want to spend that type of money for a headlamp I might not like.
Well, I'm like on the other side of that spectrum is like, I'm just always afraid of failure. Like I'm afraid of equipment failure. And like, you know, like I said, I've been out there with a one little CR203, LED headlamp in my teeth, navigating. So like the last thing I want is to have that rechargeable battery go bad or, you know, it me not have the ability to recharge it. Or like I ran into this with a rangefinder years ago. Like all my stuff now is AA batteries because I know that in
any store you're gonna find a AA battery.
Yeah, but I'm not gonna stop. Yeah, I'm not gonna be able to find that one little stupid battery that goes in my rangefinder, you know, so now you're just stuck.
Yeah.
And I just want it to be like stupid easy. Like I want it to just be simple. And like you said, if you've got an extra battery with you, then, you know, but the rechargeable ones, and you know, 90% of the time you can't take the batteries out. Or like you said, for the money, if you want to buy a separate battery for it, well, that's a special battery and it's, you know, the same price as the whole headlamp.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. That's why I shy away from the rechargeable stuff.
Yeah. Like it says, and too, like it's a cost thing too. Like I don't call myself cheap, but it's like, my headlamp, I've had literally the same headlamp for like 3 years now. And it's like, do I really want a new one? I kind of like this one. You know, it's the band's a little stretched out now, but I'm like, it doesn't bother me, you know? But for me, it's like the green light. It's a bright green light, which I love, you know? Because the red lights, I don't know if maybe I'm getting older, like the red. I'll use the red climbing up the tree sometimes because the green light's a little too bright, like facing a tree, like it blinds you. It's so intense. But like walking out, it floods the area with plenty of light. So I don't get a, you know, shit whip in the face by a branch I don't see because that's awful. Or the giant spider just waiting to attack your face because you can't see it. So I like the big, you know, like a floodlight almost, like a real wide angle light, you know, and I can see a good 10 yards in front of me, you know. Some of them, like the, like I said, the ones that are too narrow, I don't like those lights.
Yeah. So what else are you running? So you said you're running the Timber Ninja sticks, right? So what saddle and platform and how many sticks are you running? Aiders?
Yeah, I got four sticks with the aiders built in. I haven't done a height test yet because, you know, I'm an idiot and I, you know, twist my ankle a month and a half, you know, 6 weeks before the season opens. So now I'm in a stupid boot. But four and an aider, like I might have to make like a three-step aider for the first stick or something, you know, or like the top stick or whatever, so I could take it off so I don't blow in the wind to get me where I need to be sometimes. Because sometimes I do get up around like 23 feet and I think that'll be pushing it with just four smaller sticks and an aider. I would have to get like really overstretched the sticks, which is not something I'm comfortable doing, you know, as I've gotten older. So that's something I need to work on. Latitude method two, the two panels been so comfy, so easy to set up. Their single panel's nice, but not as comfy for me. I'm kind of skinny, so I like the two panel adjustability for comfort. And I'm running the Wild Edge battlement platform. It's a little wider than the tether platform I was running, because I do hunt a couple bigger trees, and the original, you know, tether platform, the smaller one, it kind of limited my around the tree shot opportunities. So I like the battlement. It's nice. I do have a ring of steps I want to try in the backyard. I kind of like them, especially on the bigger trees. So I'm going to try to throw that in the mix a few sits this year. The Bowman steps.
Are those the new ones or are those the
Bowman ones? The older ones. Yeah. Of course, like I buy them and 3 months later comes out the new ones. And I'm like, you mother. You know? But yeah. They're nice. You know, like I got six and I pretty much just make three blocks of two. So it's like kind of wide. And the way I set them up, like I got a bigger tree I plan on using one. The smaller tree, I don't think it's necessary. My platform, I can shoot around a small tree. But I think some of the bigger trees, medium-sized trees, that I think the ring of steps might be beneficial. But there again, I haven't really hunted out of them, so I'll find out when I hunt. Because like I said, backyard's different than actually being in the woods and sitting still for 2 or 3 hours. You know, 45 minutes is not 3 hours. You can really work, you know, you can stomach through 45 minutes an hour in the backyard, but 3 hours, that's, you know, that's one of the things like you won't know until you actually are in the tree. And then you're like, well, this is great or this sucks. I hate every second of this.
Yeah, those aren't bad. I actually have some of those. I gave them to a kid because he didn't have a platform, but I... Mm-hmm. I would carry them in my, this is what I'm talking about with like carrying a big, cause I use a Super Day pack as well. But carrying a big pack, it's like, well, I'll throw this in there. And very rarely do I know like the exact tree that I'm going to sit, you know, I'm just going to go to this area and, you know, hunt. And by using the sticks that I have with the platform on the top, I've run into situations where that ends up on the tree is right at the crotch of a tree or right at the big limb. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'm still hunting like I hunt with, like a hang on. So I'm just going to get right up there and I'll have a lot of back cover. Well, now like all that shit's in my way, cause I'm on the wrong side of the tree, you know? So I'm looking at it.
I still do the same thing sometimes. Like, that'd be great. I get right in there and you get up there, you're like, well, this sucks because you got this branch. You know, you're like, this is awful. It's like, I still do that. It's like, or in the dark, you're like, I can make it that high. That fork's 20 feet up. I need about 16. You get like 3 sticks high. You're like, you're staring face to face in the fork. You're like, well, this is awful. Like I had a situation like last year set up and same thing. Like in the dark, the tree looked great. I scouted it, you know, like 2 years ago. I was like, I'm just going to sit this spot. You know, don't know what was, is it a morning sit. I'm going through, like I'm stuck in every stick of bush. That's why I'm, you know, get there super early because I had to go around so much stuff to get to this tree. I get to this tree, I'm just covered in sweat. You know, like I'm like dragging like a giant branch with me. It got stuck in between the backpack and my neck. I didn't know. So it's like, I'm carrying all this extra weight because I'm dragging a log, you know, beast of burden behind me. And I get to this tree, I'm like, I think this is a tree. I was like, 'cause 2 years, long time in the woods. And I'm like, there's a lot of sticker bushes around here. I was like, I gotta get up. And I'm like, I think that's that tree. I'm looking, and I got the light going up, like the green light. And I'm like, was it that tree? No, it's this tree. I'm like, well, I'm gonna pick the middle. You know, I can cover both trees maybe. So I get up, I'm like, yeah, I can make that. I'll put the platform here. And in my mind, I'm like, I'm setting up like I'm doing a hang on for some reason. I don't know why. I get up there, I'm like, well, this sucks because I got no shots anywhere. So I got the tether like crazy long so I can like shoot around this, because it's like by this time I'm getting set up, it's daylight, you know, I'm like, I need to be just set up, you know. And by the time if I would have like broke down and moved, it would have been like, I probably would have just left. So I'm like, I'm going to tough it out. So the way I set it up was, all right, I'm good. And I literally have one small window to shoot. And the deer come to the left up this ditch, like parallel in the ditch, it's great. I shoot all day. But if they come out at the ditch, it was like made like a T. So they come up one end or this way. Well, a split main beam buck, not a giant, but I would have shot him because he's pretty cool. You know, split main beam. He come right at me and then made a hard left. I couldn't move, but he's coming right at me. And then when he made the left, I had no shot opportunities because I got this, you know, this branch in my face. So it's like, this is depressing. And I'm like, ugh. 2 years, like perfect scenario, perfect wind, perfect everything. And I blew it because I set stand up or the saddle up in the wrong tree, like an idiot, you know? But
yeah, so I bring a set of those. And I'll set them up on the tree, but like I've had similar situations. Now, what do you say? I mean, I guess like with everything, there's a trade off, right? So yeah. With your, for all the guys that are like, you know, saddles are just a fad, you know, you can't, you know, everybody says that you can shoot 360, you can, you know, you can climb any tree, you can hunt from any tree. And you're just outlining, or we're just outlining, like scenarios where like we got screwed because we had poor tree choices or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, so what do you say to that detractor that says, well, if you'd have just been in a hang on, you'd have killed that buck, right?
Yeah. I would say that. I'm like, shut your dirty mouth. No, it's just like, for me, you know, as I don't know, because I had a tree stand accident. A few years ago, you know, a decade or 12 years ago, where like I'm lucky to be walking or alive. So for me, saddle, once I don't see myself going to a traditional stand hang on ever again, because the saddle allows me to be attached to a tree going up and going down. So for me, it's a safety thing. Not getting shot on a deer, could care less. You know, it's not going to make or break my life. Me falling and being paralyzed or dying, yeah, that's a problem. So what you might lose in some trees, I gain in knowing I'm going to come home safe. Or let's say the lineman slips, I got step sticks or something in there, I'm not going to just fall like a rock. Something's going to catch me and swing around. Like a broken leg is better than a broken back, you know? So for me, I don't see myself not using a saddle. You know, I hope they're around in, you know, 30 years when I'm still hunting, you know, and 74 years old, I still think I can saddle hunt, you know, Eberhard, but he's getting up there in age. He's still saddle hunting, you know.
Warren Womack, he is 75 or something like that and hung out of a saddle.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, for me, it's a peace of mind knowing I'm safe going up down the tree. You know, it's not a repelling device where your alignments can still be dangerous, you know, but I've tried alignments and the harnesses getting out of trees. I would never use them. It's getting away, you know. But now using a saddle, it's like, oh, this is great. You know, you learn to trust the gear. And for me, coming home and seeing my kids, my wife and kids is more important than killing a deer. You know, being around for that is, you know, that takes, you know, precedence over everything.
So it's basically another tool for you as far as like hunting, but in that the safety aspect has just kind of surpassed anything.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. You know, and you know, going through what I went through, because I had the lineman's belt, I wore it going up the tree. I don't wear it coming down, and that's when the accident happened. So if I had a lineman's belt climbing down, I wouldn't be in the position I'm in now. Yeah, because like with the saddle, that don't pouch on. Let's say I hunt a tree with a bunch of limbs. I got the lineman's belt on. Well, if I can get around a branch, I reach in the pouch, pull out the other you know, put the tree tether, loop it around, you know, and use that as a another lineman's belt, you know, and then go back to go up the tree. So being safe is way more cooler than, you know, getting a shot on a buck, I guess. But, you know, those guys that say saddles are can get in the way or whatever. The buck I shot last year in PA, if it wasn't for the saddle, me being able to swing around a tree, you know, 270 degrees at full draw, you know, just working myself around the tree, I wouldn't have shot that buck. He was moving so fast. So for me, being a full drawn saddle, I can swing left, right, up, down, and be completely safe. I'm not going to fall off. You know, you try that on a, if you're wearing a full body harness and, you know, you got this strap going around your neck and you got to go around a tree at full draw, you're trying to hold on full draw, not have that strap go against your face, you know, or block your vision and not fall off, you know, the little 19 by 26 platform you're standing on. So it's like, because I've lost deer in a hang on because of that full draw and they swing around a tree and you can't do anything because you can't swing around a tree at full draw. Because you might be on the corner of a tree, whatever, and it happens. You know, it's like, you know, you're I'll let down and try and swing on a tree and like redraw. Well, that never ever worked out for me. But being in saddle, you know, I killed my buck last year because of it, you know?
Yeah, unfortunately, I can relate to that with the being in a lock on with a harness. And, you know, unfortunately, it was probably like, you know, keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to fire. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I was at full draw and I swung around to the other side of the tree and my elbow got caught up in my safety harness, you know, because mm-hmm. I was leaned out and trying to swing around.
Yep.
And bow goes off and that arrow's still flying. And,
yeah.
You know, I was like, well that's, you know, over.
I mean, when I was using a hang on, like when full body harnesses first came out, you know, I used one, talking 25 years ago. They had some crappy full body harnesses. I lost a shot on a deer because that full body harness got wrapped around my neck and scared the crap out of me. I was like leaning out, like, because I grew up in an era where you just had the waist belt and you lean out and use the waist belt to get shots off. You know, like for me, what I bring in my pack, everything has to have a purpose. You know, like, you know, my line of work, sometimes we have, you know, we call them window washers belts. You know, we got to lean out. Well, I use a window washer belt and I'm comfortable like leaning out and having the belt hold me. And I use waist belts. And people are like, you're crazy. I'm like, listen, I have the waist belt around my chest. You know, I've fallen out of a tree. You know, I've jumped off the platform. Sure, hurt your arms, whatever, but whatever. But it's a lineman's belt, it's a tree hopper, you know, waist belt. That's what I used for years because I don't like the full body harness. I want to be able to use my harness as a tool to help me get a shot on deer. Like I've killed a lot of deer by lengthening that rope and leaning all the way out, almost like you're hunting out of saddle and taking a shot on a deer, you know, and that harness is keeping me tight, you know, and put leg against a tree and using the harness as a, you know, 3 points of contact basically. So for me, like using a full body harness and not being able to help me kill deer, it never really clicked with me because I felt like you're really limiting yourself using a full body harness. I know that some people's probably like screaming because I'm saying that, but that's just my take on it, my view on it.
Yeah. And you know, you see a lot of guys that were doing that, and that's, you know, the guys that hunt with like the rock climbing harnesses, right?
Yep.
Then they use it as a saddle or but they'll use it on their lock on so that they don't have it up above them and they can, they can use, I think Jason Samkowiak, that's how he prefers to hunt. He says, I'll never hunt from a saddle, but that he's, you know, adapting it for himself.
Yeah. There was a safety belt company years ago, something, but it was basically off a rock climbing harness and it was, you know, a safety harness, but if you fell, you kind of sat almost like a rock climbing harness, but it was like real thin streamlined and it never caught on, you know, cause everybody's like, you need a full body harness. Like if you look at guys that wear full body harnesses, Like I've jumped out of an airplane. Like I went parachuting and they make that harness tight, a properly fitted harness. Like, and I've fallen out of, we practice stuff when I worked in the amusement industry, but a full body harness. When they're tight, like, and you jump out and it catches you, like it hurts and it's tight. Now I see people, I got friends that use a full body harness. It's so loose because I don't like it walking in. They never readjust when they get to the tree. So they have this thing like super loose. Well, that's not going to help you at all. That's actually going to hurt you. You have too much play. Like the harness isn't going to be able to do its job. Like nobody's sitting in a tree stand with a harness that's actually like super tight and the way it should be. Very few people, I should say, because it's, for me, it's very uncomfortable. I've tried using full body harnesses in my backyard. Like I'm like, for me, like how it would have to be to work properly. For me, I was like, this is just uncomfortable. Like sitting, standing, like I just felt like a lot of change, like a lot of movement, like moving around with it. You know, I'm not saying you shouldn't use one by any means. This is just my views on full body harnesses.
So it sounds like your whole setup this year is going to be new this year.
Yes.
Any changes
new
with
to me?
Yeah. Yeah. Any changes with your bow or any of your broadhead setup, anything?
I don't even know where my bow is. It's somewhere in my basement. I haven't shot my bow since December. I have dealing with some shoulder issues in January and like, it's been feeling good. And then I'm like, and then I hurt, you know, I irritated at work. So I'm just going to just wait till about a month before the season to break it out. Find it, I should say. I really don't even know where it's at, to be honest with you. It's somewhere downstairs in the kitchen. I got like 6 bow cases down in the basement. So it's in one of them. And but I'm running the same bow lash as everything, same sight, rest. You know, I'm not going to do anything in strings. I'll just clean them and, you know, beat it up this year.
So guys, that's listening to this. Like that's a huge thing for Greg, who's, you know,
yes,
been,
that's a tough one.
You know, he shoots like basically didn't you say you try to shoot like a few arrows every day in the basement, like just for form?
Yeah. And that's dad life for you, I guess, you know. So, bad life and being injured, it's like, well, if I irritate my arm, you know, like I'll probably change out my sight to a 3-pin. I got a 5-pin on. I probably won't be shooting 60 yards this year because I'm not putting the time in. I didn't shoot any. I'll shoot a 3D right for the season. I'm simply just backyard shooting. So I'm going to keep my shots limited distance wise. You know, like last year, I didn't really start shooting until August for my elk hunting trip. But, you know, by the time I left for elk hunting, I was, you know, shooting 70 yards of broadheads pretty well. So, you know, it's like riding a bike, you know, I'm not too worried about it. And most of my spots this year, I've really scouted thick cover. Most of my spots are going to be under 25 yards. You know, like my buddy said, if you're using a 20-yard pin, you're hunting the wrong spots. And I kind of took that and ran with it this year. Most of my spots, if I see it here, is going to be super close and be super low to the ground, you know, 5-6 feet, maybe 10 feet. And just 10-yard shots would be great.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah, I think we kind of covered all the stuff that I wanted to cover.
Let me put one more tidbit in that when you use your, like your sticks, like when I set my platform sticks up, when you're going up, I say everything stays the same. My sticks and how I set my platform, I don't change. I go up and I set my platform off to the right. So I can do it in the dark. I don't get up like I'm going to put the platform on the left this time and deviate from that plan. When you're setting your sticks up, you know, set them up the same exact way in the yard, in the woods. If your strong side shots over here, you know, you need set your sticks up accordingly. Don't try to hide your sticks from the deer coming in at you. Those deer don't care about the sticks in the tree. You know, as long as you don't have nothing, you know, your straps are tight against the tree and there's no movement, then sticks going to just blend in. You know, make sure you just set your sticks and your platform the same exact way every time. And coming down the same exact time, like, you know, like muscle memory kick in after a few times and you can do it like in your sleep.
Yeah, that's something for me that I guess in trying to help guys out, or, you know, when they say what sticks or what do you think about these or what do you think about that? Like, I think it's something that I just take for granted, because you see somebody that's moving to sticks for the first time, or they're, you know, they swapped out their cam buckles for daisy chains or rope mods or something. And, you know, now they're fumbling around, and it's I set my first two sticks from the ground, the other two are on my hips as I go up. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I mean, I just feel like I'm just like going to work. Like, it's just that muscle memory, like, confident in setting them up. And it's like, contradictory, I guess, because I do every single time at some point feel like that Clark Griswold, but, you know, I've come to know that what I need to do in that situation, where it's not like I'm panicking, and I'm not like you said earlier, like with the lineman's belt and the lineman's loops on that saddle, like I trust the equipment. So I know exactly, you know, what I can and can't do.
Yeah, because I know, like, for years with the hang on, I would set the sticks up where I think they're on the opposite of the tree. So I went up and the sticks would twirl sometimes. And I'm like, you're coming down in the dark, you know, you're just setting yourself up for disaster. My sticks, and like I said, I learned from the Wild Ed steps, you know, like using them, like I set them up at chin height every step with the Nader and Swader. Boom, boom, boom. Like nothing changes. I get up, you know, the platform goes to the right. I could probably do it blindfolded, you know, on a tree, you know, I could probably do it with very little light, or, you know, even blindfolded. And that's how I want to get with the sticks. But this ankle injury is just really sticking it to me.
Well, in the meantime, you've been doing a lot of scouting and stuff like that. Where can people follow along with, you know, all the stuff that you're putting out? Because you're putting out some great, helpful content for guys.
Yeah, YouTube, Instagram. You know, I got two videos on my phone I'm trying to edit, and this editing software, they must have like changed it. And it's just I got to extract the audio separately and then upload it. And you can't just like put it in. It's been very frustrating for me. I don't know, because it looks like I'm lip syncing to like a, you know, old Kung Fu movie. And I'm like, this looks awful. And it sounds so good. Like everything's good, but I'm like, the words don't match the lips, and I'm like, yeah, I can't put that out there. So I'm still working on that. It's a really good video. It's about summer scouting for buck beds, but I don't know if it's going to make it to print, because it's just so bad. It's just so bad.
I don't know. I think if it's a good video, and the content's good, like it'll be great. But I think people would like would watch it anyways. And if you just started it out with like a clip that was like literally like Greg Fu.
Look at the guy from Police Academy.
Yeah.
Fight me.
And just say, hey, I just wanted to have this out there. Because, I mean, that stuff's hilarious. And it does happen. Like, whether it's a podcast or a video, I mean, you know, what are you
going to do? It's like so weird. Cause the app icon changed. And then I have half the videos good. And I was like, I did like a little intro, like I talked about summer scouting. I can't get them to match up, but the last half's good. So I'm like, really? The last half's good? Like in the woods, it's good. Like I didn't have my microphone. It was all crappy, but I cleaned it all up. I cleaned all the audio up. Like, all right, that's good. But the front half is just me lip syncing. And it's like Milli Vanilli, you know? I'm like, oh, it's so horrible. And it's like, I spent, because like I've been out of work, you know, so I really haven't been to work. I spent hours trying to get it. And it's like so frustrating because, first of all, I'm working on a phone screen. It's like, and then like my stepdaughter say something or my wife say something, I'm like so confused. I'm like, leave me alone, I'm working. just give me 5 minutes. She goes, you said that 2 hours ago. I'm like, 2 hours, 5 minutes, but it's the same thing. I got stuff to do, you know.
Oh man, that's hilarious. I mean, it sucks, but that's the struggle.
You know? Yeah, it's all once. Like now, it's like I need to just carry my, because I bought a 4K GoPro, and I can put my microphone and everything on. I got the little holder for it. I just never use it because the phone's just always in my pocket, you know? And it's like, I should have just brought the GoPro. That's why I bought it for it. I didn't even use it, you know? muscle memory, my phone. I've been using my phone for the last 2 years. So it's like, yeah, GoPro, I ain't got time for that. And then I was like, oh, let's try to use the GoPro. It'd be so much simpler.
Right, right. And so that's the Bow Hunting Fiend YouTube and Instagram, correct?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, so Kung Fu Scouting with Greg Litzinger.
Yeah. Well, to scout with me. What did he just say?
Oh, well, awesome, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Always fun.